controls the British crown. Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do.
Who leaves Atlantis off the maps?
Who keeps the Martians under wraps? We do. We do.
Who holds back the electric car? Who makes the Gutenberg?
Of their sight.
Who rigged every Oscar night?
We do. We do.
Catapults of propaganda.
Dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to the bunker this lovely Ides of October.
Yes, we're halfway through the month already, and it's finally turning cool here in mid-Mo.
Oh, it feels wonderful here. I'm just grateful that we got past Friday the 13th.
Yes. You know, interestingly, this was the 699th anniversary of Friday, October the 13th of 1307, when King Philip the Fair of France arrested hundreds of Knights Templar.
That's right. We talked a little bit about that last week. That is why we thought perhaps October the 13th, being a Friday once again,
yes,
as it was in 1307, would be a day that perhaps the stock market would crash. Well, it's still up, up, up. They're predicting it's going to hit 12,000. Mm-hmm. Get another zero in there. But if you translate that to $2,000,
right,
the year 2000, correcting for inflation, no, it's more like $10,000.
Yeah, it's not what it appears to be. It is really interesting to me, and we're just going to go roam over the map here this next hour.
We're
or so
roaming
on PID,
all over the place.
Sort of like we did last week. We're just going to kind of roam around here,
yeah,
and we'll start with the economy.
So fasten your seatbelts.
That's right.
It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yeah, well, starting with the economy, we're hearing about what a great economy we've got because the Dow Jones Industrial Average is at an all-time high and shooting for 12,000. But what is really behind those numbers? There are 30 stocks that are selected by the Dow Jones for their average, their index. And what they don't tell you about this index is that when companies fail to perform well consistently, or go bankrupt, as sometimes happens in business, they just kick that stock out and they bring another stock in. This happens from time to time, not too often. They try to keep it from affecting the average too long. But basically, it amounts to...
Why, that's manipulating the stock market.
It basically amounts to manipulating the numbers. Yeah, yeah. If there's a stock that is consistently underperforming, they just kick it out of the index and replace it with something else that is,
unless,
say...
Unless, of course, they want it to dive.
Yeah.
If they want the Dow Jones low, they leave it in.
Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Now, the other thing, of course, as Sharon mentioned, that they don't account, they don't correct for inflation. And when you factor in inflation over the last 6 years... to equate to where we were in 2000 when it hit its all-time high previously, we would be at or below 10,000. Mm-hmm. So
it's so misleading. If you watch the talking heads on the weekend business shows all day long on Saturdays, morning especially, but Saturday's a great day because the business people are home. A lot of the, you know, moms and dads are sitting together watching the television, and there are all these business shows that come on and they talk about finances. What stock do you pick? Wayne Rogers, you know, sit down and tell us the stock for this week. They'll get the guy from Ferris Bueller on and he'll give his opinion.
Ben Stein.
Ben Stein, thank you very much. I could win his money.
That's right.
they will ask for opinions, and it's really easy to get suckered into these shows and think, you know what? I could take some of these picks and I could do online trading, or maybe I could be a better steward of the money I have in my 401k. I could put, you know, this percentage of it towards stocks that are a little speculative, or I could put this part in nice safe bonds or something, because many of the 401ks now allow you to allocate certain percentages to different sectors of the market.
Right.
what I find really scary about this is that these talking heads in general are saying, oh, bullish, bullish. The bulls are running. The bulls are still running. Mm-hmm. Oh, it is so, it's a great time to get in. Phooey.
Yeah, it boils.
It's a lousy time to get in. It's about to crash.
Yeah, and we certainly don't pretend to any economic expertise.
No, we don't. We're just
that we've got some common sense and some discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the foundation of the American economy, it is pretty much crumbling. We've mm-hmm. shipped all of our manufacturing, you know, or a good chunk of our manufacturing capacity offshore.
Mm-hmm.
Our balance of trade deficit is huge and getting bigger. And our economy is basically based on consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to continue to consume, we need foreign governments that are willing to buy up American debt, which so far the Japanese, the Chinese have been willing to do. There will come a day when the piper is going to, you know, call in his debts. I'm mixing my metaphors here. and it's not going to last forever.
No, it isn't. It reminds me, if you have an old house, and you see that it's starting to fall in, so you paint it. And you keep painting it. And you get to the point where you have so much paint on there that the paint is holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, you don't realize that the termites have beaten the house, but all you have left is a shell of a house. That's essentially what Derek and I are starting to see in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting a really nice finish on the outside. But the fact is, if you really look at the numbers inside, what's really going on in the national economy, it's lousy.
Look at housing. Housing is a great indicator. As we can attest firsthand, the bubble has burst on the mm-hmm. housing market.
It's not just our house. We've been looking at all the houses in our neighborhood, and they are now selling for $25,000 to $30,000 less than they did 4 months ago.
Right, and that's a 15 to 20% drop in a span of less than half a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. And there were a lot of people like us who were in a situation where they borrowed either to get in or to mm-hmm. refinance, mm-hmm. you know, up to 90, 95, even over 100% of the appraised value of the house.
And a lot of those people got in on loans where they're paying interest only.
Interest only, right. And so they're not making any headway on the principal, and now suddenly the value of the home has dropped below what was owed on the home. I think over the next 6 months to a year, we're just going to see a huge number of foreclosures and mm-hmm. banks taking possession of property.
Yeah, lest you think that we are speaking from some sort of a really smart little catbird seat where, oh, we've made all the right decisions and we're telling you out of our knowledge.
Not.
No, we've made a lot of bad decisions, and that's why we know what it's like to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're speaking to you and you're in a similar position, you know, God bless you. Do what you can to cut back. Cut your spending. Try if you can find a way to make a little extra dollar, a few extra dollars, do it. Don't spread yourself so thin that you go crazy.
Right.
Don't ever do that, because life is the day we're given. But do your best to try to get out of debt.
And the bottom line is that much of what is being touted as wealth in by the media, you know, if you own these stocks and these stocks are worth X, then you own blah, blah, blah. Well, again, that's paper. That's mm-hmm. that's not a tangible. And when the spit hits the pan, as it were, the people who actually have some tangibles in their hands, whether that be and we've talked about, you know, gold, mm-hmm. silver, and mm-hmm. metals before. We're not convinced that that's the way to go. Tangibles in the form of property that you can actually grow food on
mm-hmm.
or, you know, canned or dried food may actually be of more value than all of the money that you've got, you know, mm-hmm. in electronic dollars stacked away someplace in the form of a stock option or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the economy is being portrayed in the media as being really healthy. We don't believe it.
No.
And because there's just no foundation there. Elsewhere around the world, the big political news, the hoo-ha for the whole last week, has been the Representative Mark Foley scandal.
It's been the Foley scandal or North Korea. You've either had that domestic or foreign.
Those are the two big issues. We'll only talk about Foley for a second because, frankly, this whole mess just turns our stomachs. But it's our opinion that this is not a partisan issue. This is a bipartisan, cross-the-aisle type scandal. There have been scandals with congressional pages before, and it's touched both sides of the aisle. And the only reason it's making any kind of waves right now is because there's some political gain in it for the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And it really disturbs us that this, I mean, well, frankly, Congressman Foley's behavior disturbs us.
Oh, very much so.
But what really disturbs us is that this is the center of American political debate right now instead of what's going on in North Korea and the fact that we've got those two carrier groups that are sailing towards the Persian Gulf mm-hmm. and the Eastern Mediterranean.
Oh, which most people don't even know about. Our listeners are savvy.
That's
though.
Right. Naval exercises coming.
Well, I'll tell you, you need to watch what's going on in the rest of the world. As we've said before, and I know that you guys listening out there, you're smart about this. If we're being directed one way, mm-hmm. look elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because this Mark Foley scandal, this reminds me so much of Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
In the meanwhile, what was going on in the rest of the world?
Right. Yeah. It was the stuff happening mm-hmm. behind the scenes
yeah.
with the Iranians, the Iraqis, you mm-hmm. know, President Clinton firing, you know, missiles off to distract us from Monica Lewinsky.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, what is going on in the rest of the world now? Right. You all know about Kim Jong-il.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's obvious. We have a friend, by the way, who took a good look. Now, he's a guy who would know. And he took a good look along with some of his co-workers.
Mm-hmm.
This is a man who is a researcher, and trust us, he knows.
He's served at the very highest level behind the scenes in government.
Exactly. And he told us that the waveform was all wrong for a nuclear blast.
Mm-hmm. These may have been the conventional explosives that were intended to detonate a nuclear blast, which for some reason didn't explode properly. As I understand it, when you put these shaped charges around the outside of the plutonium core or whatever the core is, they have to fire in precisely timed sequences or all at the same time, something like that. But anyway, mm-hmm. the timing is very critical. And if one of the charges fires even a nanosecond off from when it's supposed to, it just basically blows the thing apart before instead of causing a nuclear detonation.
Mm-hmm.
I did read some interesting speculation, though, that instead of being a misfire, that this might actually have been, it's a small possibility.
I think this is really interesting.
Yeah, and this is a small possibility because this would require even more technical ability than the North Koreans are supposed to have.
Okay, this isn't rumors. These are spoomers.
Speculation rumor. The speculation is that this was a sub-kiloton blast, a small blast. Now, for a normal nuclear device, you'd be looking at the 20 to 40 kiloton range. So if this was a sub-kiloton explosion, you're talking suitcase-sized nuke, mm-hmm. perhaps. And the speculation is that the fact that this was a small blast is not necessarily good news, because if it was, in fact, a suitcase blast, then the North Koreans are essentially advertising to terrorists around the world, we've got your suitcase nukes right here in mm-hmm. Pyongyang.
Yep.
So
that is something to, now.
Yes, that is something to consider.
Buy one now, you'll get two. Just pay the extra shipping and handling.
And call before midnight tonight, we'll toss in these Ginsu knives.
No, it's not funny, I'll tell you what. And he's so easy to poke fun at.
Right.
And that may be part of his strategy. I don't know. But just remember what North Korea does. I personally think
mm-hmm.
the real puppet master is coming from China.
I agree. I think he is the barking dog in a chain that China lets loose when they want to test our capabilities and our reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, and this is something that I was not aware of. I saw a note about, well, I think you found this, the nightmare scenario. You did for Watcher Magazine.
Yes.
The nightmare scenario that military planners in the U.S. Think about in the wee small hours of the night, their sleepless nights. Mm-hmm. Some months ago, you might remember we talked about former Defense Secretary William Cohen, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. It was either Cohen or Perry, who co-wrote an article in which he called for an immediate, and this was during the first missile test crisis
right.
with the Norks, North Korea, the Norks, yeah, called for an airstrike to take it out. And Sharon found an article, which she posted to Watcher Magazine, that said if we were to do that, North Korea has enough artillery trained on Seoul, South Korea, which is not far from the demilitarized zone, that they could launch several hundred thousand explosive shells per hour on Seoul, about a quarter of them filled with nerve gas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about that. Now, if these guys who wrote that article were aware of it, surely the former Secretary of Defense was aware of that, too.
Mm-hmm. Was it Stratfor? that did that?
Yes, it was Stratfor, the intelligence, Stratfor.com, by the way. It's a very good source for some inside intelligence and analysis of
things
happening
around the world. We'll put a link to the article, and in that article, I link to Stratfor.
Right. So the... that makes me wonder why a former Secretary of Defense would call for an airstrike on North Korea, knowing that North Korea has these artillery positions in place trained on Seoul. Seems a little odd to me. But anyway, the point is that we aren't going to go in and blow up North Korea simply because we could write South Korea off the map.
Right.
If we
bear in mind, too, that we're pulling out of South Korea.
Yeah. And it's not likely that if we went in and dropped a bunch of high explosives on North Korea, that the Chinese, who are right across the border, wouldn't be very happy about it. And the Japanese would likely catch some blowback from this as well. So,
I know. Well, this time next weekend, a little left turn here.
Yep.
Not necessarily a left turn on the map. Actually, it's down to the right. But, I guess it all depends on which way you're going. But our ships will be in place in the Persian Gulf around October 21st, assuming that all went well. And... these are a couple of specialty groups that are there, and they're not there for sightseeing.
No. It is a rather large...
The Eisenhower group is there, and the...
Bunker Hill.
Yep.
And they are going for a rather large naval exercise, or at least that's what we're told. Naval exercises to begin on Halloween.
You know, you were telling me about an explanation you had to give to, was it someone you worked with, who was saying, well, come on, I mean, this is offshore, it's outside, it's in international
waters,
so what? And you had to say, yeah, but what if somebody in international waters, which off the coast of the United States is only 3 miles out?
12
miles. It used to be three, it's 12.
Yeah. What if Russia sent a carrier group over 12 miles off the coast of, say, Los Angeles and began doing military exercises 12 miles? And you just said, you know, hey, we're in international waters.
Right.
Well, I think that would get us a little peeved.
Carrier group with planes on board, missiles.
Nuclear capabilities. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what we're going to be doing in the Persian Gulf off the coast of Iran and the Eastern Mediterranean off the coast of Syria and Lebanon beginning October 31st. Now, the ships are supposed to be in position by the 21st.
Mm-hmm. October 31st, Halloween.
Yeah.
So, a very powerful occult night.
Yes. So we're looking very carefully at any news reports we can get from the Middle East over the next week or so, just to see when those ships arrive and what the response of Iran is going to be. I can't believe that Iran would just sit back and say, well, you know, help yourself to the Persian Gulf.
In the meanwhile, Russia is participating in cyber warfare. There's a cyber warfare game going on right now. And when I posted this story, which I posted it on the 13th, oddly enough, Friday the 13th, I wrote in there about a dream that I had had the night before. And that was about a dream that a computer here in the United States somehow made a mistake, misunderstood something.
You want to play a game?
Yes, and started lobbing missiles toward Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia managed to get off two that I can remember seeing in my dream. And I saw where they landed. One landed in Washington, and the other one landed somewhere around Illinois, Indiana, and there.
Mm.
And it was very real. I have a lot of dreams, but every once in a while, I think if you've ever had one, you know what I'm talking about, where the dream just feels really important, and it's very, very real, very realistic. And I woke up and I told Derek about it, and then later that morning I saw this story where Russia and...
Here's the thing, though. It's a joint exercise between Russia and NATO.
Uh-huh, I know.
This is a joint exercise between the command forces of Russia and NATO on theater missile defense, which is controlling missile defenses for a specific battle theater. Doesn't it strike you as a little weird? I mean, I thought that most of the time when NATO was doing a missile defense exercise, it would be to protect against missiles coming from Russia.
I know. Speaking, though, of cyber warfare, the United States now has the Cyber Command.
Yeah, interesting.
You've heard of Northcom and Southcom and Eurocom. There's now Cybercom.
Yep, the division of the Air Force. The Air Force, in fact, the Air Force mission statement is now to fight or to fly and fight in air, space, and cyberspace.
That's right.
So the Air Force, the Marines are looking for a few good men. The Air Force is looking for a few good hackers.
Does this have anything to do with why Russia is doing a cyber warfare?
I don't know.
I mean, let's think about it. If computers are running a program over there, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could hack in and mess up their program?
Well, that is possible. I suspect it has just to do with the reality of war in the 21st century. The fact is that a division of the Department of Commerce, I posted a story and talked about this on my show on Monday. And again, this may be something that I pulled from Watcher Magazine. I don't recall because I don't have a link here. But Chinese hackers had gotten into the Department of Commerce servers and hacked into computers belonging to the division of the Department of Commerce responsible for approving technology transfers to other nations.
No, that wasn't from Watcher. That's a new one on me.
Yeah, this was a story from last Monday. So the Chinese are actively employing hackers, cyber warriors, to attack U.S. government computers, and I suspect that the Air Force is now finally responding to it. What's interesting, though, is that while they're doing that, there's also a division of the Virginia National Guard. What they kind of nicknamed it the Big Brother Unit.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is to go around and look at military blogs and websites to make sure that nobody, active duty or retired military, are accidentally posting things that they shouldn't be posting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I suppose for security purposes, that's a good thing. I guess the question is, how far do they take this cyber censoring? But, it was kind of interesting being called the Big Brother Unit.
Well, while we're talking about cyber censoring, just really briefly, I want to discuss something that you may be seeing commercials for. And if you are, you may, like us, or like myself at least, not quite understand what the heck is being talked about.
Yeah.
Net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phrase that's on a commercial playing here in Missouri right now that is just sponsored by the cable companies, which I found really interesting. But it's saying net neutrality, oh, it's evil.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that. Well, net neutrality is the FCC's phrase for a set of rules, and I think there are four in place right now, and they apparently, with the AT&T Bell South merger, part of that deal is that the FCC says, okay, we're going to add a fifth element to this net neutrality. But what some providers want to do is charge extra for more speed. If you have a broadband connection, well, if you buy this special tier for only $5 more,
mm-hmm.
then you'll have access to Google and Fox News and CNN and all of the top sites, and they'll load in 100 times faster. Now, that's an exaggeration. I have no idea how much faster. But according to what I've read, the proposition to the FCC is that we would like to charge an extra bonus for better services,
mm-hmm.
which means there's going to be a slow pipe and a fast pipe.
Right.
To get in the fast pipe, you have to go through the selection process. In other words, not everybody's going to be on the fast pipe.
Mm-hmm.
This is gatekeeping.
Right. And it is deliberately, I think, portrayed in a very simplistic way in the ads that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And all that they tell you is net neutrality, bad. It's the evil Silicon Valley tech companies, multi-billionaires that are trying to, take more money from you. But, of course, the ad is from the cable and telecommunications companies,
mm-hmm.
who are trying to take more money from you.
The cable companies spin it this way. They say, if you allow us to do this and have a premium service for people who want to pay extra,
mm-hmm.
then because we're making more money there, we can save you money on your cable bill.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, sure, they'll do that. I'm mm-hmm. sure that they're going to do that. But what bothers me is not only would it, they would be gatekeepers of certain sites, they would also be telling you what you can and can't watch in that premium service.
Right.
And they may even come out and say, you have to download it via this browser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of like AOL used to do.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's going to be.
Well, and it's very interesting because as we saw this past week, Google has announced a multi-billion dollar buyout of YouTube, which has become a very popular video sharing service. And almost immediately, certain videos that were critical, they spoofed Bill Clinton. And they were basically conservative-leaning parody site. Their stuff disappeared from YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before you say, oh, this is paranoia, this doesn't happen here, remember that Google, MSN, and Yahoo have all cooperated with the Chinese government in cracking down on dissident thought there.
That's right.
If there, why not here?
Exactly.
Oh, we're free. Really?
Well, and here's the other thing. They could easily say, look, we allow anything and everything, all content. We are not censoring.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there are some pages, some websites that aren't on the high tier, the fast load tier.
Mm-hmm.
So they're loading in slowly. But if you want to watch that, that's your choice.
Yeah.
If you want to sit and wait for 10 minutes for it to load.
Mm-hmm. How long do you want to watch the little spinning hourglass?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that is certainly something to watch out for. And along the, on the same lines, we just keep an eye out for the United Nations desire, intent to eventually take control of the internet as well.
Mm-hmm.
The internet. Well, that's a whole other topic, but I think that if the UN does get control of the internet, we'll also see certain crackdowns on various websites out there. So,
oh yeah, yeah. I have to briefly say before we go into something else, I came across a website that essentially imagine a Masonic lodge that's just on the internet.
Okay.
They're the E-Masons.
A virtual Masonic lodge.
The E-Masons.
Wow.
So, there's an application online.
So do they do like a virtual electronic handshake? You know,
I don't know.
Protocol to, you know.
I have no idea. I didn't even take a look at that.
Is it X-Modem or Z-Modem?
There's a lot of information there. Anyway, it's a feast. We'll put a link to it. I think it's phoenixmasons.com or Phoenix Freemasonry or something. Well, don't quote me on that. We'll put a link to it so you can go there and check it out yourself. But I had no idea. I figured for sure this is the kind of thing that you really need to be with somebody else. But they are selective. They're clear about that. There's an application online, but not everybody gets in. I'm betting they wouldn't let us in.
Probably not. You know, I was out yesterday and had a I had a great time. I just, you know, detour for just a moment here. I got to judge a Kansas City Barbecue Society sanctioned event yesterday. KCBS Barbecue. These, you know, 23 teams of people that really take their barbecue seriously. And I thought, what a great event. There is no more American an event than barbecue.
And you wore a white shirt.
I know. Oh, you know, I was there in a capacity for the radio station, and the station shirt just happens to be white.
Yeah.
But even at this event, I walked past a vehicle that had a bumper sticker on it that said, "Ask me how to become a Missouri Mason." And it had the little compass and sextant on it. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Oh, that was great. Well, honey, I think we figured out what we're going to do when we retire.
Yes.
We're going to get one of those motorhomes.
Motorhome.
A satellite dish on the top so we can do the podcasts from the motorhome.
And trail behind one of those little smokers.
That's right.
And just go around from contest to contest making barbecue.
That's right.
That's it.
Oh,
they really
goodness.
Take it serious, though. I had to judge on presentation and taste and texture. So
I know.
Really,
there's so much to it. Well, we were talking about cyber warfare before and on the internet. There's something else when it comes to electronics that's in the news, and I really want to address. It's a new video game that's out.
Disturbing.
It's very disturbing. It's called Bully, B-U-L-L-Y, and it is not Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-mm. You play as a student who's been sent to a...
Bullworth Academy.
Yeah, Bullworth Academy, which is a private school. The kid is a kind of a reprobate. He's from a broken home, mother
exactly.
and a wealthy stepfather. They're basically shipping him off to Bullworth Academy to get him out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And as this player, this student at this academy, you win points by beating up other students who are trying to bully, you know, friends. You have to make allies and use violence.
The only way you can win is to become a bully.
Right, exactly. And it involves fighting other students with weapons like trash can lids, baseball bats, slingshots.
Poking their eyes out.
Yeah. Game is the target of a lawsuit filed by Florida attorney Jack Thompson, who filed a similar suit against Grand Theft Auto San Andreas last year.
He's not popular with heavy gamers.
He is not. There's a T-shirt out there that says, I hate, and the word hate is almost looks like it was carved into the T-shirt because it's dripping like blood. I hate Jack Thompson.
I think that proves our point.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the radical Islamists who want to prove Pope Benedict wrong by beating him up.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're not
what
a violent religion.
We're violent.
Yeah.
Kill him.
So Thompson has filed a suit. I'm trying to get an interview with him for the radio station. We'll see if that works. But the game is disturbing, especially considering the rash of school shootings that we've had over the last two weeks.
Oh, I know. There's so many. And the organization that rates games here in the United States rated this so that kids as young as seven can play this game, can buy this game. Hmm. It's not rated 17 or older or T for teen.
Well, it does have a teen-only rating.
Does it? According to the show we saw today, MSNBC, they said that it...
I think that when we watched the MSNBC interview, and, uh-huh. and by the way, we have to add the you know Contessa, whatever her name is for MSNBC, was very adversarial in the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think Thompson's point was that there are so few controls at stores that sell these videos, like Walmart and others, that kids as young as seven will find ways to get the game in their hands.
Inevitably they will. I mean, it could be rated 20, 21 or older, and a parent bugged enough would go buy it and give it to their kid.
But it
not caring, because many parents don't play video games.
Don't play the games, right. And that is something that we've done, especially, you know, you and Nicole really had an opportunity to bond over some of those
video games.
Did.
You know, you and I are both gamers, and we're not into really bloody games or anything like that. We like to fight monsters.
Right.
We don't like to fight human beings.
Cartoony monsters.
Exactly.
Preferably.
Very cartoony monsters. But we like the fact that the puzzle fact, that's what I like about a game.
Mm-hmm.
The games I play, you know me, my favorite is Zelda. The whole Zelda franchise. But this game, we've talked before about fiction, watching a movie, and how it gets past this barrier that your brain has naturally to say, I won't accept that sort of behavior. Mm-hmm. I won't accept that story if you tell it to me in a documentary or if you give it to me in a news story. However, if you put it into fiction, into a book or a movie or a video game, then somehow it gets past that barrier and into the brain. And you are not only watching it, you're doing it. You're acting it out. So a pattern of acceptance is being created in your brain that allows you to just block out the fact that you're beating up fellow students.
And gamers will deny this and protest this till the cows come home, but it's a fact that the U.S. military uses 3D sims for training for a specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it conditions the player to pull the trigger when he needs to pull the trigger. In World War II, and we may have talked about this once before, so forgive me if I'm repeating, but in World War II, it was found that only 15% of American soldiers, when presented with a clear shot of an enemy soldier, were able to pull the trigger. Now, this is without a commanding officer standing over and reminding him that he had a job to do. But by Vietnam, that figure had gone up to 90%. A soldier presented with a clear target, a clear enemy soldier target, was able to shoot. Why? Because American soldiers, after World War II, began training marksmanship by shooting at silhouettes, human silhouettes, instead of at bullseyes.
Right.
Just that simple change got past the psychological barrier that most of us have against taking another human life.
Mm-hmm.
How much more effective, then, is a video game, especially one that is very lifelike, that in which you have to pull the trigger to shoot another human being or commit acts of violence against other human beings? Is it any wonder, then, that we've got a generation of kids growing up who don't have the same restraints against using violence against other people or taking other lives as they did in previous generations?
Right. So if you allow video games in your house, you know what? Just take a look at what they are. If you haven't played them with your children or watched as your children play them, sit down.
Mm-hmm.
See what it is they're doing. don't just trust the cute little pictures that are on the outside. It isn't just violence. A lot of the video games have very heavy occult symbols in them.
Right.
I'll be honest, the Zelda series does.
Right.
And Nicole and I had the opportunity to really talk about it. We used that game as an opportunity to discuss how these symbols are being just put into kids' brains. And kids are just starting to accept and being programmed practically. Mm-hmm. And we also talked about cartoons with the same thing, that it was in a lot of cartoons. And so she got to where she could recognize a lot of those things.
Right.
Derek and I peer into darkness, and we have spent the last 9 years helping Nicole to learn how to do that.
Yeah. And sadly, our culture is awash in it. And if you've listened to our program for any length of time, you'll know that we don't think it's an accident that this has happened, that there are forces at work behind the scenes outside the boundaries of human sight that are guiding, encouraging, and promoting this flow of information in our culture. And the good news is that we see in Scripture that this was all prophesied, and that it's coming.
That is the truth.
There's a reason for it. So elsewhere in the world, oh, by the way, I just want to toss this out real quick. It's apropos of nothing, but I think kind of humorous. The CEO of Google addressed a meeting of the Conservative Party in Britain, and he tossed out this little nugget. He predicts that within 5 years, there will be software available online that people can use in real time to check the probability of truth of any statement coming from a politician.
Oh, that's right. I saw that reported. Yeah,
the truth predictor. No word on how the politicians responded, but I imagine it was with horror. So just thought that was kind of, as long as we're talking about cyberspace, I just thought I'd toss that out there.
Oh, my gosh.
See that in Iraq, the move is continuing to divide Iraq up into three nations.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Mansfield translated a statement at an Islamist website, sent it out to her news group over the weekend. And in fact, it was a video. The Mujahideen Shura Council of Iraq has announced the formation of the Islamic State of Iraq. Now, this is not coming from the government of Iraq. This is coming from a religious group inside Iraq. The video claims that the new country, in quoting marks, will consist of 8 of the 18 provinces of Iraq. It's pretty much the Sunni area of Iraq, but includes Kirkuk, which is that oil-rich territory in the north that the Kurds want to control.
Right.
Because about 40% of Iraq's oil is up near Kirkuk. The other provinces include Baghdad, Anbar, Diyala, Salaheddin, Nineveh, and parts of the Babel and Wasit provinces. Again, that's most of the Sunni area, but with that Kirkuk territory thrown in. The video claims that the new state was formed after both the Kurds and the Shiites secured what they believe to be semi-autonomous states within Iraq. And this is what we've seen proposed since 2002 by former CIA chief James Woolsey. And now politicians in Baghdad, the Iraqis, are talking about this. And it looks like they're calling this the Biden plan after Senator Joe Biden?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As though he came up with the idea.
I know. I wonder if Biden's planning on running. I know he wanted to run last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Al Gore had that privilege. And
now
that along came.
Former Governor Mark Warner of Virginia has backed out. There really is nobody in that second tier of Democratic politicians that'll run. Hillary is the top tier. There's
you know,
no question.
There are a lot of Democrats that are lining up behind Joe Lieberman right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to go. I really don't.
I don't think so either. He may be an intelligent man. He's clearly a pretty savvy politician, but he doesn't have, let's face it, he's not telegenic enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I hate to say that that's the reason we elect a politician in the U.S., but it is.
Well, one of the guys lining up behind Joe Lieberman is Dennis Kucinich, who, if you recognize that name, he was one of the Keating Five.
DeConcini. Dennis Kucinich.
No, not Kucinich. Yeah. Sorry, DeConcini.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Whose brother Dino DeConcini is one of the owners of a little company that I'm going to talk about here right now called the Apollo Group. Not Apollo Hosting, which is the company we use for hosting our website. Well, I know. Silly us. But you know what? They're good. They actually worked out well for us. But the Apollo group. Now, let me tell you how I got to that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a story that came out in the news today called Copycat Cloning Firm Turns Tail. Now, anytime I see something about a cloning place, I pay attention. The story goes, a California company set up to clone beloved pets has gone out of business after cloning just two cats. Now, they cloned those two cats back in 2004. And they're just now going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
They were bought out by a company called Viagen. Viagen is based out of Austin, Texas.
Interesting.
Viagen bought out their tissue bank.
That's really interesting.
It's very interesting because Genetic Savings and Clone, which is the name of the company that went mm-hmm. under, went out of business because they couldn't get enough people to want their pets cloned. Dogs and cats, maybe mm-hmm. a bunny or two. I don't think that tissue, and I'm not sure why they would have any tissue. Why would you have tissue? Unless, I'm really confused about this. Unless they were practicing on something. They bought out their tissue bank. When Viagen is a livestock cloning company,
I got to tell you,
some of this livestock that these farmers have, these ranchers have, mm-hmm. is extremely valuable. You know how those AKC winners, you know, like the Yukonuba Cup, those winners?
Right.
They bring high stud fees, the racehorse winners. Well, a lot of these bulls are bringing high stud fees.
Right.
And even, you know, you've got a really special, breed out there that you want to continue, or a special stud,
mm-hmm.
and this is essentially what this company does. Now, if you thought that this wasn't being done here in the United States, I'm surprised. You must be a new listener. I can't imagine that our people who've been listening for very long would even bat an eye at this. Viagen, out of Austin, Texas again, is owned by a little place called Exeter Life Sciences. Exeter Life Sciences is essentially a holding company. In other words, they don't do a whole lot. They just
put up the money.
Exactly.
Right.
Exeter Life Sciences is the property of the Apollo Group. The Apollo Group is headed up by Dino DeConcini, who is Dennis DeConcini's brother,
mm-hmm.
and a man named John Sperling. John Sperling is the guy who started the University of Phoenix.
Yes, that's that online place that you keep seeing those little pop-up ads for every time mm-hmm. you go to a website. A company that doesn't have the greatest reputation, and I don't know details, so I'm not going to say much more than that.
They may be legit, but I also know that there are rumors out there. There are stories that you can buy your degree. And incidentally, there are stories coming out of Washington this last week that there are a number of office employees who bought their raise by saying they had a degree when, in fact, they had bought that degree.
Yeah. I do know that the University of Phoenix was fined almost $10 million by the Department of Education in the U.S. for its recruitment practices and its treatment of recruiters. The Apollo Group has also been, and this is according to Wikipedia, so take this source for what it's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
But according to Wikipedia, it's been the target of a securities-related lawsuit alleging that the group disseminated false financial statements to stock purchasers. Again, that is per the entry at Wikipedia.
Well, let me tell you another company that the Apollo Group owns.
Yes?
A little company called Kronos.
Kronos.
Which, of course, means time, and it's mm-hmm. also the name of one of the Titans.
Yes.
Kronos is an anti-aging medical facility, supposedly. Extremely wealthy patrons come in, and they go through a battery of very expensive tests. Let me just sum this up in asking you a question. Have you ever seen the Clonus Horror? It's a cheesy movie. It's got Peter Graves in it, so it's got a little something redeeming in it.
Yeah.
But I think essentially, this is what we're seeing with these little cloning companies. We want all the tissue we can get because we need to practice. Because what we're doing is setting up to clone humans for parts.
Well, and that's very interesting. There was a story that came out a week ago that researchers in the United Kingdom are petitioning the government there for the right to clone transgenic humans. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is take human tissues, take the nuclei, and insert them into the eggs of rabbits.
Mm-hmm. Because folks, that's been done.
Yeah, it's been done, but they want to do it with public approval.
Exactly.
Now.
They
yeah.
want public money.
They want
for
public
it.
Money for it, right. The reason they say they need to do this is because they need to perfect the technique. Remember, and I've forgotten the name of the South Korean researcher now, but the gentleman who was mm-hmm. supposed to have been the first to create a viable human embryo by the mm-hmm. cloning process.
Right.
It turned out that he lied.
Uh-huh.
But he went through about 2,000 human eggs in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, women don't produce eggs that rapidly.
No.
In order to go through 2,000 eggs, you've got to get a lot of donors. And that rate of success is about right because mm-hmm. the cloning process doesn't usually take. So what the researchers in the UK are trying to do is get around that problem of where you get all the human eggs by using the eggs of rabbits or cows. There have been reports that researchers in South Korea have been doing this also. That is probably coming to the U.S., and that may tie in with the stories that you were researching today about this whole...
Mm-hmm. The clonus horror.
Yeah, the clonus horror. And that relates to something that we're paying very close attention to here in Missouri. On November 7th, we'll be voting on a number of issues, one of which is Amendment 2, the Stem Cell Initiative, which would essentially make human cloning a constitutional right in the state of Missouri. It's that simple.
It's not worded that way.
It's very
deceptive.
But
that's essentially what it is.
Page 1 of the amendment, as it's written, says, human cloning shall be illegal in the state of Missouri. But then inside on page 3, they redefine cloning
mm-hmm.
to mean somatic cell nuclear transfer is okay as long as you don't implant the resulting embryo mm-hmm. into a human womb, into a woman, which means you can actually create the clone as long as you kill it again. Mm-hmm. It's actually a clone and kill bill.
Exactly.
So they also, interestingly enough, say that it'll be illegal to buy and sell human eggs. But then inside again on page 4, it says that firms may give compensation or mm-hmm. Some such thing. May
We're
exchange
not buying.
Yeah, may exchange value to women for their eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's on the and why do they pick Missouri for this? Well, number one, there's a research institute privately funded by a couple named John and Virginia Stowers, the Stowers Institute in Kansas City. They've ponied up that couple has ponied up about $15.5 million out of the $16 million. That has been put into this effort. Missourians for Life-Saving Cures is the mm-hmm. is the nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mr. and Mrs. Stowers don't want to scare researchers away from their institute. They want to attract top scientists who don't have ethical problems with cloning, apparently.
Right.
Which is why they put it in the bill. Now, number two, why do it in Missouri? Because this is heart of red state America, and if they can get it through in Missouri, then... How are you going to be able mm-hmm. to convince opposition in Georgia or Washington or Oregon or wherever that they should oppose human mm-hmm. cloning?
Yep. So, yep. Well, I hope it just backfires on them. My prayer is that enough people who are conservative, especially the Christian conservatives, take a look at that and say, I'm definitely going to the yeah. polls this November just to make sure that that gets voted down.
The sad thing is that the way it's been presented in the media and through their advertising campaign is confusing. Polls show that 85% of Missourians oppose human cloning, but about 52% of them are in favor of Amendment 2 because they don't connect it to human cloning.
Exactly. So. Well, they're going to read past the first line, not past the first line, they're going to, oh, well, I know what this is. Vote yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll hope that
vote
enough
no
of our,
on two.
That's right. Hope enough of our fellow people, fellow Missourians will read
I past
the
I need to go
line.
To a story that may take us a while.
All right.
Well, before we go to that, let's go to this, because this is just really, really interesting. Where do you think George W. Bush might retire when he's all done?
That's a really interesting story. I would never have guessed.
Paraguay.
That's more than Uruguay, by the way. That's
yes,
next door.
It's a Paraguay.
You put them together, it's Paraguay. But I'm. Ch-
How much does a unit weigh?
Oh, about 3 pounds.
Yeah. Oh, we slay us.
A little more than a hen weigh.
Oh, yeah.
There's a story that's come out from the Prensa Latina, which is a Latin American news service, mm-hmm. which quotes a government official in Argentina as saying that George W. Bush has purchased something like 9,000 acres of land above the headwaters.
More than that, 98,842 acres.
I was only off by a factor of 10.
Yes.
Above the headwaters of the Guarani Aquifer,
mm-hmm.
which is the largest or one of the largest, if not the largest, freshwater aquifer in the world.
Mm-hmm. This aquifer is part of a natural resource that's linked to an agreement called Mercosur. And Mercosur is it's among the following countries. Let's see, it's Paraguay, Brazil. I can't see it on this map. I don't
Argentina.
Have a list. Argentina. And what's the fourth one?
Chile, I think.
Chile is on the other side, isn't it?
Peru.
I think it's Peru. Oh, shared by Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay.
Uruguay, okay.
In a mutual agreement known as Mercosur.
It's like NAFTA.
It's sort of like NAFTA. And while they all agree to share this aquifer, because, of course, the aquifer is underground,
mm-hmm.
Bush has bought, according to Prensa Latina, he has bought this almost 100,000-acre farm right in the middle of this aquifer, and it is not too far, if our information is correct,
mm-hmm.
from the land that was purchased by Sun Myung-moon.
Sun Myung-moon and his Unification Church apparently own millions of acres of land above the headwaters of this aquifer, and there is concern among politicians in South America that Moon's purpose is to, A, control this aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
As the population grows, fresh water will become more and more a valuable commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And, B, to control the drug trade that comes out of that part of the world.
Oh. Ah.
Now, Moon's connections to intelligence organizations mm-hmm. in South Korea and the United States is well known.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, Sun Myung-moon owns the Washington Times newspaper and United Press International. There are rumors, albeit unfounded, I think, that he's connected to the Secretary General Designate, whose name is also Moon, although mm-hmm. not related, from South Korea.
Right, they're not related, but according to the things that I've read, and I had a couple of stories here on Watcher, he is at the very least a former Moonie, but I'm not so sure that there's such a thing as a former Moonie.
Mm-hmm. So it is very interesting, at the very least, to know that Moon and George H.W. Bush, George Bush Sr., have been very close through the years,
mm-hmm.
that Moon has been a big supporter of conservative politicians and candidates in the United States and elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
and that now it appears that George W. and Mr. Moon will be neighbors in this very important source of fresh water in South America. Interestingly enough, we also note that Sun Myung-moon has invested about $1 million in the educational software company run by Neil Bush.
I know. We reported on that last spring, or maybe even earlier than that, that Neil Bush was touring the world with Sun Myung-moon.
And that he was, just lapping up money from investors in, Dubai, among other places. Well-funded Arab mm-hmm. investors from Saudi Arabia and the UAE.
You know, speaking of brothers, Hillary Clinton's brothers are being investigated again.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that story's also on. We'll link to that. We don't have time to go into that here. But their adventure was over in Georgia, the state of Georgia near Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Judicial Watch, you can go to their site and see that they have petitioned for an investigation into their doings, not only there, but also regarding loans here in the United States, where they agreed to, whisper in their sister's ear and mm-hmm. say, will you please give a pardon to so-and-so?
Right. And Hugh Rodham, her brother, was investigated for that around the time of...
Well, her other brother is also being investigated, yeah. Anthony.
But you mentioned the state of Georgia, and interestingly, there's a lot of tension going on in that part of the world right now. Russia and Georgia. Georgia arrested 4 Russian soldiers a couple of weeks ago, accused mm-hmm. them of spying. They let them go, but the Russians now have well, basically crack down on Georgian businesses inside Russia. They have put a travel restrictions on people moving back and forth between Georgia and Russia. Mm-hmm. Things are really heating up there. There are a couple of provinces in Georgia which are border on Russia.
Mm-hmm. In a way, this is a proxy war with us.
It really is, because the United States supported the pro-Western government of President Saakashvili mm-hmm. in Georgia. That was the so-called Rose Revolution mm-hmm. that took place there a couple of years ago. A lot of American money went into funding Saakashvili and his campaign. The Russians aren't happy any more than we would be mm-hmm. happy that, say, a pro-Russian candidate were funded in rubles and won mm-hmm. the elections in, say, Canada.
Why do we care? Because there are natural resources there yep. that we want.
Georgia is very strategically located.
Yep. One more story that I want to rant about, and that's the story that I found just a little while ago. A headline, radioactive snails in southeast Spain.
Oh, no. The escargot.
The discovery of radioactive snails at a site in southeastern Spain where three U.S. hydrogen bombs fell by accident 40 years ago may trigger a new joint U.S.-Spanish cleanup operation, according to officials. Now, this story
40
really,
years ago. That's in the 1960s.
40 years ago. 40 years ago. In 1966, after a mid-air collision between a bomber and a refueling craft, three hydrogen bombs fell. Two of them detonated on impact, spreading plutonium dust-bearing clouds across the nearby fields. I've heard nothing about
this
in
this
the last
either.
40 years. Well, apparently now, 40 years later, short lifespan little snail is showing up with radioactive problems, glowing in the dark, and I have to wonder why it's taken 40 years. Now, mind you, the dirt was removed, supposedly, from these sites to protect everybody.
Okay.
Now they're saying, oh, gosh, these radioactive snails must be because of those bombs that landed 40 years ago. I know we kept it a secret and we didn't say anything, but we're going to tell you now because, well, frankly, isn't it? It has to be the reason why they're radioactive, because depleted uranium being used in the Gulf can't have anything to do with it, right?
Yeah, good point. Boy, that's a scary thought, because we talked before with Carl Schwartz about that report, mm-hmm. which got no traction at all here in the U.S., just as we suspected, that they were picking up spikes in radiation at detectors in the U.K. in weeks after major offensives mm-hmm. in Afghanistan and Iraq. And if the wind patterns are right, certainly Spain might be in the pattern.
Exactly. Well, Spain isn't that far above Africa.
No, it isn't.
No. I mean, so it stands to reason that if the wind's blowing to the west.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story. That is really that would be an interesting cover.
I know. And if you like escargot, you might want to think twice about it.
Yeah. Well, snails. Ugh.
Well, they're just too creepy. Even with the butter, the garlic butter sauce, that's okay.
Yeah, I'll put that on something else. Toast.
Barbecue.
There you go. Well, boy, we've used up a whole hour already and barely just scratched the surface of what's happening there.
I know.
Thank you for riding along with us again. And if you have any comments or questions or tips for us, we really appreciate those. Do let us know. Email is radio@peeringintodarkness.com, or you can direct email to one or the other of us directly, Derek@peeringintodarkness.com or Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com.
That's right. Or you can stop by the forum any day or night, and we welcome you all there. However, as we've said before, play nice. Otherwise, we do have certain rules that well, to be honest, I don't think we've got an FAQ or posted.
No.
But the rules of just being congenial. I don't stop by just to, kick everybody in the face, so to speak.
And that has, we've been very
That's
congenial.
That's only happened once or twice in the whole time that we've had this now, gosh, year and a half.
Oh, yeah, if not longer.
Yeah, long time.
And we're getting close to 400 members on the forum, nearly.
That's amazing.
That really is amazing. So thank you, and thank you for being such a wonderful resource, because a lot of people will log in there and exchange news that you just don't see in the mainstream media. And, mm-hmm. and that was the whole purpose, to get together and exchange these ideas and talk about them in a forum where you can do it without being looked at funny. We all got foil hats on there.
That's right. Well, in the meanwhile, have a wonderful week. Keep an eye on the stock market. And as Derek said, if you've got a tip for us, send us a note. Until then, I'm Derek. I'm Sharon Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon's husband. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye, everybody.
News and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.